曾经相见是缘分，同心挥刀剑破敌阵，漫天血箭刀荡寻常，踏遍千山把风雨叹，无端相见又离别，湖海奔波各有命运，历经百劫只有我独行，面对几多苦与困。
Hello, welcome to the Floating Through Film, episode 101. This is your host, Blake. This week we are starting my series of John Woo as the cast trainer. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
Right away.
Right away. Right away. No, John Woo, starting my new series, one of my favorite directors of all time. But before we actually get into anything, let me introduce my co-hosts, Luke.
Hi.
And Danny.
Hello.
All right, so before we actually get into anything, what do you guys think of John Woo? I know that, Danny, you've seen more of him, because you're actually the one that got me back into watching him, because I had seen, prior to last year, only three of his movies, and now I've seen, like, 23. But, the three I had seen were just Red Cliff, Part 1 and 2, Hard Boiled, and then Mission Impossible 2. Okay. But then after watching, obviously, I fell in love again. But, so what do you guys think about him, before we actually get into anything?
I mean, you kind of hinted at it first. I guess I'll go first, because I'm more curious what Luke's going to say here.
Okay. Looks like I hate him. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm expecting Luke not to like him.
No. I don't want to be a hater.
Even though Luke should... There's some connections that Luke should love, like the Melville connection,
obviously. Oh, yeah.
Obviously.
Melville, Demi.
Demi. But Demi.
Yeah.
John Woo looks Demi. Oh, okay. There's the music class.
But... Well, he does love Demi.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he does.
Oh, but... interesting. But yeah, no, I like... You know, I think we're going to talk about it. I like John Woo. Like, this is probably a better question for the end, because, like, of the series. But I do have an opinion already, like, obviously. Because, like you said, I've seen... I was looking up now. I've seen 14. My opinion of him is... I think he's, like, really one of the greatest, like, stylistic directors ever. And, like, obviously his influence on action is still just, like, all over the place. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's just so obvious, like, he created a certain kind of fast action... Really, there's like before John Woo and then after in that kind of way.
Sure.
I don't know, cause like even like if you watch an action movie from the 70s, it's gonna be slower. Like basically everything is gonna be slower from the 70s and below. You know, even the fast ones are kind of slow. You'll feel, and then like from John Woo onwards, it's like just because of the cutting and stuff. Like
yeah,
the action's just like way faster and stuff. But it's like one of those things. Like even if you like Star Wars, like one of the negative effects it's caused kind of thing. Like, because, like, I love John Woo, but he's obviously had, like, some people that just try to do John Woo, but it's, like, just way worse.
No, for sure. They do. There are terrible.
And it's, like, a way to cheat. It's, like, because, obviously, John Woo was so creative in being, like, how can we do low-budget action and still make it look high-budget? With, like, a bunch of close-ups and stuff like that. You know, basically doing what cinema's supposed to do. But then, like, at the same time, like, it made other people just be lazy with action.
Yes.
Like, which a lot of later action movies obviously do. Which is why I can, like, feel all of a sudden refreshing when you see, like, a John Wick 4 where it's, like, slow action all of a sudden. You actually see all of it happening on screen again. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, like...
No, I think that's one of the biggest things. The seeing what is happening on screen, basically,
that
separates John Woo from other action directors after him. Because he has this way...
He does both.
Well, he has this way of just always orientating you to the action you're watching
on
screen. You can't... You don't get lost, per se. Whereas in a lot of action movies that try to copy him, you always get lost in the action. Like, I've seen a lot of Hong Kong movies like that, a lot of American movies like that.
Because it's hard to do action like that.
It is.
And make it feel like he does, like, still musical, still, like, rhythmic, but you feel like you know what's going on.
Yeah. And we have that in the first movie we'll be talking about with Last Straw also. But before we get to that, let's ask Luke, what do you think about John Woo?
I've seen three John Woo films
before.
I watched Mission Impossible 2 in 2019, so I basically haven't watched it. But I didn't like it.
Well, we aren't gonna watch it.
Yeah, yeah. But I think last year I watched...
I feel like that's kind of a hot take, though, not like it.
That's the common take.
Oh, but same time, like, am I too?
Yeah.
I don't know how I'd feel about it if I watched it today, but
I didn't love it either. But
it's a great movie.
But yeah, I watched A Better Tomorrow and The Killer last year, and I liked both of those. I didn't love them as much as you guys, but like...
So you're going to hate next week.
I'm explain why I'm excited to rewatch, and I think I'll like those more, is because like, I was just kind of thinking this week, like what I remember about... Okay, first of all, I got to explain my issues with the action genre before I go to this, but I've gotten a reputation as an action hater on this podcast, which is partly kind of true. I feel like a lot of action movies, a lot of times it's just like action. If it's like, if there's like a lot of action, then a lot of times it just becomes like a bit monotonous for me.
Yeah, no, I actually really agree with
like,
those.
And
yeah, like, it's, like it, Michael it, Bay. Yeah.
Whoa, whoa, why?
I mean, I didn't say anything.
Someone like, who actually you can tell must be inspired by John Woo in some ways. Especially, like, the explosion aspects, you know, just, like, human explosions.
Okay.
But, yeah, like, it's...
Honestly, those two have some of the best explosions ever.
They do.
But, yeah,
I guess these two really don't show that as much. But, actually, Planet Jane and the Rescue starts with the kind of one.
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, the car... There's, like, a random car wreck during the credits.
No, yeah.
And then it says, directed by John Woo, like, right after.
So yeah, I a lot of action movies, like, a lot of times I can have the tendency to get checked out. A lot of times. No, yeah, there's too much.
Plus, it's a really lazy thing. Like, it can be like, okay, they're trying to fill, like, 2 hours or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, okay, well, this is an easy way. We don't have to write a script. We can just be like, okay, there's a chase that happens for 20 minutes or 15 minutes. And it's, like, obviously done in, like, some CG booth or whatever they do it in. And, like, it's just, like, no creativity, right? It's, like, just a way to fill time.
Yeah,
and like Woo's feels different. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Daniel.
It's one of the easiest ways to be.
A movie just like it just like feels like it's just a bunch of people getting like shot, basically. Like, sort it's kind of like what keeps me from like loving the John Wick like, series,
except
like,
for the heroes because they're not even threatened by any bullet.
Yeah.
You know?
But to get into John Woo, like. I am really excited to watch because the main like scenes I remember from those two movies are the melodramatic scenes, and he's like that's probably like my main thing I like about him right now is like he's I think I briefly mentioned this last episode but, like about melodrama but like he's an example of like using melodrama correctly.
Yes,
and to me like how I kind of view him right now is like he is like a melodramatic director for me like first and foremost but like the action's like the extension of his melodrama and
yeah
so with that in mind I
or
think
he I'll almost like, sees no difference between the two
yeah
he's more focused on the emotions than he's on the action most of the time.
Well, I think that's why he likes both.
No, yes, for sure. Yes. Well,
melodrama and action are very emotional. Like,
yeah, and he chooses, and we'll see this multiple times in his movie, is to pause the action. We'll actually be talking about that soon. To like pause the action whenever it's happening, so that people can talk to each other, basically.
Yeah,
I mean that you could say that started a negative thing too with like Marvel movies, like some like Marvel character being like, oh, like there's a rocket, like it almost hit me. Like, they make some joke about it all the time or something.
He's right behind me, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was kind of thinking about it.
So yeah, I am really excited. I think I will, like, with that in mind, like, knowing that, I think I'll really like those two more. And I'm interested, like, to see what his other movies are. Although, I am a little worried about like, his later period, because I don't know if those will be right up my alley, specifically. I don't know, there's something about him that maybe...
Which ones from... Are we doing Patreon?
What are you talking about?
Which later what period?
Face Off and the, okay. In the war.
Oh, okay.
In the war.
You don't have to worry about Face Off.
Okay.
Wind Talkers we aren't doing either, but...
I thought you said we were.
No, we aren't doing Wind Talkers, sadly, but...
Okay. And, like, Redcliffe, like, I don't know, Redcliffe, just like...
We're not doing Patreon either.
Bob, what are we doing?
We're doing Redcliffe the last week.
I don't know.
I knew Redcliffe. I was like,
but no, I'm not set. I could be swayed, but so I am interested to see like watch through him. I'm not a hater. Yeah. But
you'll be a John Woo lover by the time this series is over.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we can go ahead.
No, but what about you, though?
Yeah, bro.
I already said I loved him.
No. What was the reason you picked him? Because you said you really haven't watched him before last year, right?
Yeah, no, I fell off of watching Hong Kong in general after watching Johnny To and then those three movies by John Woo, essentially. And then I finally got back into watching Hong Kong again last year, obviously. Yeah, but, no, John Woo speaks to me on a spiritual level, honestly. feelings of, like, loyalty and honor between people that are completely different. Or, like, different, but also the same, because we'll talk about doubling a lot in the series. Like, he uses the double a lot. Like, we'll see, we'll talk about that in Last Hour Off of Chivalry, because the two main characters are essentially doubles of each other. But, no, I just love I love how he uses everything, and I love how emotional all of his movies are, because that's really what it's about. That's what separates him from other action directors, is how emotional and authentic his emotions feel, basically.
Yes.
Because, like, melodrama, I have problems with melodrama whenever it's done badly.
Yeah.
But sometimes whenever it's done like this, it just feels authentic.
Well, no, when it's used correctly, it's like incredible. Exactly. Like,
it makes you feel.
Okay,
so.
Danny, we don't need to hear your thoughts on it.
It makes you feel a lot.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
No, but I do. I Danny disagrees, but
you'd have to see. That's why you'd have to show me the movie specifically.
A Better Tomorrow.
So you say Better Tomorrow is melodrama?
Oh, it's definitely melodrama.
Oh, it is. Oh, yeah, for sure.
To me, like,
there's a lot of melodrama.
See, when melodrama is done right,
but
dude,
okay,
it's
like,
melodrama.
Because to me, it's not. Yeah, it's like, you can't take a movie out of context and say just, like, take one element to me, because it's like, John Woo is everything. It is a melodrama,
no,
for sure, but it's also just, like, his framing, which is amazing. Like, Better Tomorrow is so good. Like, the colors, like, you know, all of it, where, like, a lot of melodrama can just be boring, like, just stylistically, you know?
Yes.
It can be a lot of theatrical sets and stuff like that. Just a lot of people talking, which, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it can be.
It usually is.
But John Woo doesn't have that. His movies usually are fast-paced, I would say, with, like, the pauses, but...
No, they are. No, and the thing with John Woo is that a lot of times in action, that, like, to draw the movie out to 2 hours, they're doing a lot of the same things over and over again.
Yes.
But John Woo movies never feel like that. Like, it feels like there's this really popular.
Plane James Rescue.
What do you mean?
There's just some, like, random ass gags in it, like, to keep the movie going. But
I mean, it's a gag movie. So.
It is. Yeah. No. It is.
No, but there's this amazing tweet on Hard Boiled that someone tweeted out last year. Like, you think you've watched the coolest thing ever in Hard Boiled, but then it, like, one ups itself 10 minutes later. That's John Woo's movies in general. Like, it starts off crazy and awesome, and then it just keeps on getting better as you watch it. So
he always keeps you excited. Like,
he keeps you excited to watch it. No, but yeah, he just speaks to me on a personal level. I love him. I love him a lot.
We'll definitely get into those themes and stuff throughout.
No, sure. Yeah. Because the thing, because, like,
I mean,
it's even, like, blood doesn't make you family in his movies. Loyalty does, so.
Or money, either, which is really,
yeah,
like,
or
like,
money.
That's literally how this movie starts.
Yeah. No, yeah, so, like, Last Hurrah for Chivalry, we'll just go on ahead and get into this. 1979, this movie did not do well. did not do well at all. It failed completely. And then, mostly because this type of movie was out of date in 1979. It was this type of Shaw Brothers type movies is...
You might have to explain that briefly. What's a Shang-Chi, Shaw Brothers type of movie?
So, just martial arts in general. Like, I actually will read a quote from David Chu defending The Last Hurrah for Chivalry because it's kind of what's... is wrong with, like, why it failed, but also why it succeeds for people that like John Woo, basically. He says, Last Hurrah looks like a typical cheap martial arts picture from the bad wigs to the overlit studio exteriors, but it's recognizably a real movie. There's an effort to make the characters talk and behave naturally, and the emotions are authentic. It's a meditation on the decline of the old sword-fighting virtues, and upon the nagging fear that they may never have existed at all, except as cherished illusions in the minds of a few weirdos, are doomed heroes. So,
yeah.
That's what you could say a Shaw Brothers movie is just, like, bad wigs, overlit studio exteriors, and just, like, these common martial arts movies. Because there's a lot of them. Like, they were massively popular in the 70s. To the point where John Woo, I think this is his fourth martial arts movie, actually. Last Hurrah.
Damn. In 5 years,
yes. Because his first one, The Young Dragons, I've also seen. That one's also that one I actually like a lot. It's also got a lot of Chong Jae in it, but it's also a lot of John Woo as well. Like this loyalty for someone that you like, these doubles and loyalty for someone that you don't really know or have no reason to be loyal to, basically, except for your shared values. So, but yeah, so like the movie didn't do well because it was completely out of fashion at the time. But I personally love it, and I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say, because it is his tribute to Chong Jae, like I've said, but also to Kurosawa, which we'll get into that a little bit as well. But so what do you guys think of The Last Drop of Chivalry?
I do think there is a similarity with Kurosawa for sure, in terms of like these like deep dreams of like loyalty, brotherhood, or are they even possible in this kind of world, like the characters are in. But also their use of like close ups at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
But this one, I'm kind of like, I don't have like, I haven't seen really any Shaw Brothers movies, so I really don't have that connection to it, you know?
Yeah.
But I can definitely see John Woo in it a lot, like, especially at certain scenes, for sure. Like, it has some of my, honestly, it has one of my favorite John Woo scenes.
Okay.
The flower.
Oh, yes.
When they're all just like,
frolicking through the flowers.
Yeah, they're like, we have tonight or something. I forgot the exact quote, we'll get to it, but, at the same time, like, okay, actually, the ending was really losing me. Even though I could still tell, like, I hate when, one of my least favorite things in movies is, like, when they kill a main character, but they don't show the body or any blood or anything.
They just show blood.
Oh yeah, they do show blood. Yeah, they do show blood. But yeah, no, we'll get to that scene too. But overall, I like the movie. I can't say I love it. Like when you say that, it makes more sense. Like he had made 4 movies in 5 years. It's crazy.
He made more than 4 movies in 5 years, I think, because
yeah, it just has,
it was this one, Dragon Tamers. He made the one with Jackie Chan in Korea. Then he made Princess Chongqing.
This is 8th movie.
Yeah, Melting Crazy was another one that he made in there. Yeah, 8 movies in 5 years. It's insane.
It's kind of like Ozu's early, like where I was saying, like he was kind of just like practicing, working on what he likes, and
not it is a lot like that. Because I have seen a few of these early ones. Like I've seen Young Dragons, From Rags to Riches, I think was before this. It might have been after this, actually. But no, it's all of his early movies. It feels like he's trying to find, or he's like polishing his like what he's going to want to do later on. This one even is, he's still polishing what he wants to do on with this movie too.
I mean, does he ever talk about this period in his, like?
No, he has. Okay. Yeah, no, his interviews book is a really good book, because he actually talks about, I think it's him and Robert Elders talking about all of his movies, all of his early movies, including his shorts that he did in college from 1966 to 1990, whenever Hard Boiled came out.
Oh, that's interesting.
Or whenever A Bullet in the Head came out, I think. So.
No, I'm interested in like, hitting that shit, because I know, I forgot where I saw this, where like A Better Tomorrow is where you see, that's like the first movie he said he truly put everything into himself or something like that. But
yeah, but I mean, you could also say this movie, he put a lot because
there's definitely a lot of him.
I mean, like you said, this movie is at the end of the day about greed. And and I mean, as you said, this is his 8th movie in 5 years. Like, he knows how greedy the movie studio corporation, or like the studios are, basically. Because he wanted to make, I think it was after this movie that him and Choi Hark actually met, and they talked about making A Better Tomorrow. But he put a lot of those Better Tomorrow themes into this movie, obviously. He wanted to make something different than this, but the studio didn't let him, so. But Luke, what about you?
I liked it. For me, it's like, I guess interesting, you're talking about the themes. I don't know if it was, this movie was like too fast paced for me, or it like, I felt like a lot of it was kind of underdeveloped. But like, I didn't really feel much of the like emotional aspect of it. Like, and I don't know if that was like a studio thing either. But to me, like, it kind of like, I guess on just first watch, it just felt like everything was an excuse to get to the action.
Some of it feels that way.
Which, I mean, like, the action's cool. Maybe a bit too much for my taste. Like, it's at a certain point, it's just like, I don't know. It's just like, for me, it's just like, sometimes I get tired. But I do like the action. And it was like, it was a fun watch, I can't lie. But yeah, I liked it.
I mean, there is a significant part at the second half of this movie where it's like 30 minutes just straight action, basically. Yeah. So yeah, it can get a little exhausting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The thing that I like about the action in this is his background is different from other martial arts directors, because other martial arts directors knew martial arts. That's how they grew up. John Woo didn't take any martial arts. His was all dancing. And that's why you can, like, his action in this movie is very, very choreographed, like dance. And it's why, as we'll talk about towards his later movies, why he's considered like bullet ballet, like that type of a director. Because he puts these dance techniques into his movies, into his action. And it's really fun watching the last parts of this movie, especially for me, because it's like, it's this whole thing of like what I was saying earlier of him orientating you to the action. Yeah. Both of our main characters, Sing-Yi and San, are on screen fighting together basically the entire time.
Yeah.
And you don't really lose track of either one of them. And it's basically like they are dancing together to kill people. It's that, yeah. Or at least that's how I think of it, because
The fight scenes don't together feel like the...
Well, yeah, that first fight scene, whenever they pass the coffins and then have to fight the ghosts or whatever, and they literally make them kill each other, that's what I'm talking about. Like, they're dancing together to make this... to achieve this ultimate. What about,
like, the Sleeping Buddha ghost?
Oh, I love the Sleeping Buddha. He's so good. He's so good. But yeah, we can just get into the movie, I guess, because we don't even get introduced to Divine Sword or San for a sec. Because this starts out with... Who will be wisely in Better Tomorrow? The asshole that betrays everyone, but Lord Cao. We see this whole movie basically starts with Pai. I think his name is Pai Ma or something. I can't remember the villain's actual name. His name's Pai.
The Jack guy.
But yeah, massively Jack man that kills Cao's master and all of his, or not his master, but he just like kills a lot of people in this party that he's having, his birthday
over,
party.
Yeah, it
actually reminds me of The Godfather a little bit, because at his wedding, I think this is his wedding or something, at the wedding, the villain shows up and he like just brings him a pig head, like a severed pig head.
There's a scene where they put a horse head in the guy's bed in The Godfather.
Oh,
that's after the wedding. That's not during the wedding.
That's not during the wedding.
Yeah.
No, for a second there, I thought that you were going to tell me that was Goodfellas, and it came out ten years after this. But
no. No,
but yeah, the pig head. That's what you're saying, yeah. Yeah, no, it reminded me of The Godfather a little bit. But yeah, we get this thing of like betrayal, because he bought this girl's freedom, or his like wife's freedom. And she tries to kill him because the other guy offered her more money, essentially.
It's a good business deal.
I mean, hey, it's all great. It's all great.
What I like from this scene before this first action fight scene is because this prince, or he's a lord, right?
Yeah, Lord Cao.
Lord Cao? What's his name?
Lord Cao.
Lord Cao? Okay. Like, I thought he's kind of like, he's teased as a good guy, you said, because he does betray them later.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, I forgot who says it, but someone says, a scholarly man isn't necessarily a good man. And that kind of gives us a hint of like, this guy's not necessarily good, just because he's like, smart. And we kind of talked about it earlier, like, that's like a John Woo theme too already.
It's
just because someone's smart doesn't mean they're necessarily good either, or has money.
No, sometimes the smartest are the greediest, But yes, after this whole opening, I think it's like 10 to 15 minutes, then we get introduced to Divine Sword or San, who will be following. He's the main character, in air quotes, the T-Lung character from A Better Tomorrow, basically. But his intro is actually rescuing these kids that are trying to steal chicken from this guy,
yes.
Or like eat, because they're starving. He ends up stealing the guy's money and giving it to the children and everything. But it's just showing us that this is the type of guy that San is. He's the guy that stands up for the downtrodden in society, no matter what. And we also see this is like the first meeting between him and Green Sword. I think it's...
Who's Green Sword?
Sing-Yi. That's who I call him in my notes before we actually get his name revealed, because I forgot his actual name. But I think it's actually... Sing-Yi means green clothes, at least in the...
That's like the friend character?
Yeah, that's the Shaoyin Fat character.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, now we know.
The wanderer that helps
yes.
that helps the person that needs it, or that helps people in need.
He's like teased as like a selfish character the whole time.
Yes. Teased as a selfish character, but never is. Yeah. And well, a lot of his lines are actually really good too about that. But I think their meeting together is as Son is watching the prostitute in the brothel play her instrument, her stringed instrument. I still don't know what that's called, but...
I think the place was called, like, a House of 10,000 Fragrances or something.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it's called, yeah.
That'd be a firehouse place to go to, I'm not gonna lie. Like, it must smell amazing.
I love, like, the like, is it an Asian thing where they always have the title places, like, 10,000 or something? I kind of like that.
And I don't mean the brothel bar. I just mean how, like, if you heard about a place...
I mean, it's got 10,000 flowers and women in it, so...
Okay.
Other types of flowers. No, but... No, but I really like this introduction of them because he's just watching the lady or, like, watching the prostitute and then, like, Sing-Yi just drops down into frame with his wine bottle and then he falls. And I really like the shot of him falling because he's like, how... Or I think I actually wrote this. He said, with luck by my side, what could possibly happen to me? It's because he fell down right to the sign that says luck.
Okay, yeah.
He said, with luck by my side, what could possibly happen to me? I eat and sleep, then I eat and sleep more, and when I make money, I drink wine. Then Son says, you sure know how to enjoy life. But... yes, then we get... After this, it does kind of go to what Luke's saying, is like, a lot of this feels kind of just like going through the plot quickly to get to the action.
Yeah.
Although there are a lot of great quotes in these scenes. So, I mean, we're still going to stop and talk about some of them. But after Son leaves, Sing-Yi and the prostitute are just talking together because it seems like they have more of a history than Son and the girl do. But he said, I came here alone, I'll leave here alone, I have no relationships with anybody. That's one of the quotes with Sing-Yi. Basically him just trying to project this... It's a lot like a Western, this gunslinger myth of, like, I'm a loner, basically. Like, if I have any relationship, it just makes me weaker. Because there's a lot of Western shit that happens in this movie, so, as well.
Yeah. It's a very big theme in cinema history.
Yeah.
I feel like Melville has some characters like that.
Like, yeah.
Loner types.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Basically
oh,
all.
Yeah, 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 basically.
It's part of my job, I gotta be loner.
Yeah, basically, yeah. I mean,
Les Samurai.
Yeah.
Michael Mann has some characters like that.
And Michael Mann, the Melville connection is there with him and Mann, too. Oh.
Yeah, damn.
It's all a string.
Who's better, Will or Mann? They're kind of similar.
They
like,
are similar. They're similar.
I haven't seen enough of Wu to say.
They started kind of the same time.
I haven't seen enough of Wu to really say, to be honest.
I guess you're going to know.
It's Jean Wu.
We're going to force you.
It's Jean Wu and me, but...
I love them both, like, for different reasons.
No, they... I mean, Heat's amazing.
Does John Woo have Miami Vice?
I mean, Miami Vice isn't very good.
Miami Vice is amazing.
John Woo has made bad movies like that.
Okay, you need to rewatch it.
There are a lot of Miami Vice fans. We probably just turned off Lobby.
You're gonna... Yeah, I'm a Miami Vice fan.
I'm turning this off!
No, you need to... You'll love it.
No, I do. It's so good. It's been 6 years, I think.
I need to rewatch, too, because I didn't love it the first time I watched it.
I think we watched it, like, 6 years ago. So.
It's like... It's when I watch, I'm like, how can people say this is, like, as good as Heat or something?
Oh, it might be better.
Or The Insider.
I haven't seen The Insider.
I still haven't seen The Insider, actually.
Damn.
It's been a while. Yeah, I need to get to that movie.
Oh, it's so good.
But maybe more,
okay,
more
back
great,
to John.
Yeah, back to John. More great quotes in this scene. This is in my line of work. I mean, Sing-Yi says, in my line of work, I may even have to kill my friends. And then the girl says, but I know you won't. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been so down out of all your life. So like, this is kind of like what I was talking about. Like, we get lines like this showing that the end of the movie is obviously a red herring. Like, he's not going to kill Son. That's just not the type of guy he is. But
and that makes it feel a little more studio too at the same time.
A little bit. But she also says,
like, it would be more risky if he did, like, betray him. That'd be kind of crazy, you know?
That's not what John Woo would ever want.
Yeah, John Woo.
That's not the type of movie he believes in.
I feel like Johnny Toe is more likely to do something like that. But...
For sure. He did do that in Election.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, which do you like better, Johnny Toe or John Woo?
That one's hard. But it's still John Woo.
Oh, interesting.
Johnny Toe has a lot more movies, though, too.
He has a lot more, and there's a lot of great ones. John Woo's peaks might be higher, but... Yeah, Johnny Toe is just more consistent for me.
It's like every... Johnny Toe has, like, 60-something movies, and literally all of them I've seen are, at the very least, good.
Like,
so.
Face Off... Like, John Woo at his best is, like, unbeatable. And we're going to go through we're in the middle of one episode right now. We keep...
Great observation.
Great observation. But yeah, after all this, we basically go to San's house for the first time, see his family life, get more of his personal story. We see his mother's dying.
And watch him beat up this guy for
I love it. I love it. It's so funny. It's so funny, dude.
And the guy's like, yeah,
he just starts assaulting him.
Yeah. And he can't understand why this guy wouldn't want to marry him.
Yeah, he's just like, why don't you want to marry her? And he's like, poor, if you have love, you can have water and you'll still be awful or something like that. He's so stupid. And then he's like, but I want my wife to be well fed and live comfortably. That's what it takes to be a real man. And then Son says, nonsense. Are you marrying my sister or not? No, it's just a really funny scene. But this is essentially how Sal will try to get San's friendship and eventually try to betray him. But, because I think he wants to marry San's sister. That's ultimately his end goal. But he ends up sending a lot of, like, medicine and stuff. I think that's after his mother already died. But the next huge scene that we get to is another one of the action scenes where Sing-Yi rescues this man from, like, being arrested. And then immediately gets betrayed by the man. San comes to his rescue, and this is kind of like the beginning of their friendship, because we had that short meeting between them at the brothel, but this is really where they first meet and become actual friends.
It's fate,
exactly. No, but after this, we get a scene with Prey, and this guy is like the biggest gunslinger, like,
is he the
Western
guy in the white?
Yeah, he's the okay, white. He's, okay. This is actually the
Divine Blade.
This is the action director of the movie too.
Oh, okay.
So one thing about the action in this movie that I don't think I mentioned yet is you can actually feel the damage done to people and that they actually get tired, like, as they fight.
Okay, yeah.
You can actually see, like, real pain coming from them, which is also another, like, normal thing in a John Woo movie that's not in a lot of action movies. Like, I think Danny said earlier, like, he hates whenever you always know the action hero is never going to have, like, a scratch on him whenever he comes at it, because he's untouchable. It's not how it is in John Woo's movies. But, yeah, the scene with Prey, I just love his quote of, whoever touches my sword can only pray and accept his fate. And it's just, like, classic gunslinger shit. But, just lost my place.
Because we're basically at the spot where he fights. He doesn't. Is it San, the main hero, his name?
San's the main hero.
He doesn't want to fight for some reason. Is he a former fighter or something? It's kind
of
genius.
This is more of like that gunslinger mythos type. Like, have you guys seen Gregory Peck and Paul? Or Gregory Peck, the gunslinger?
No.
I haven't either.
So that movie is dealing with like this gunslinger myth of, once you're a gunslinger, there's no way you cannot be a gunslinger because someone's always going to want to come after you if you're legendary.
Yeah.
That's basically what's happening with San, is he was such a legendary sword fighter that he doesn't want to fight anymore, so he's hung up his sword.
Oh, yeah.
But people still will come and try to challenge him.
And the Lord's trying to get him to, he's like, he's the only guy that can help me win this battle.
Yeah, no, because like that's the other thing, is like Sal, the Lord, is trying to get San to fight his battle for him, essentially.
He's trying to get this moon sword or something, right?
That's like this legendary sword that his master owns or something.
Some like Avenger-ass plot line. Avengers-ass
okay. plot line. No, but the guy, like, the gunslinger doesn't, like, need to use his gun. It's like Rio Bravo has a...
Rio Bravo.
Which also loves.
Does he, like... Okay, that definitely makes a lot of sense, then.
It's kind of like the retired... I'm retired, but not really, like... One more mission. I have to...
Although the Rio Bravo is the young guy that's, like... He doesn't need to prove himself, so... He doesn't want to...
Yeah, this one... this one feels like he did something in his past, and that's the reason he, like, hung up his sword, because he doesn't want to, like, kill anymore.
Yeah.
That's what this at least feels like. But yeah, he ends up basically running away because he doesn't want to draw a sword against him. Meanwhile, we see Sal plots with Prey, and we don't know exactly what for yet. I mean, I would know because this is my second time watching, but your first time watching, you're like, they're just walking around, they're talking to each other, and you don't hear any dialogue. Just like classic like, oh, plotting shit.
Mm-hmm.
But then Green Sword, we get back with Sing-Yi. I call him Green Sword in my notes, but he meets the woman again, and this is more of that cowboy, gunslinger, western stuff that I was talking about, where she says, promise me this will be the last time you have to kill. And then he's like, once there's a first time, there can't be a last time.
Damn.
I will say, this is where I kind of agree with Luke. It's way more wooden, though, because it's like, first of all, she's literally there just to kind of draw this emotion out. Like,
basically.
It's like, it's like literally what I hate about romance and
In westerns?
In just any kind of movie where it's just like Chris Nolan romance, basically. Like, there's a woman character just so you can draw this kind of, like, family emotion out when you need to kind of balance out the action. Or what they think needs balancing. That's kind of what I love about Johnny Toe, though. He never has any of that.
This one's for the boys. every single movie.
Better Tomorrow doesn't really either, though.
No, that's something that...
That's where you can feel more studio movies, stuff, too. Yeah. It's like, oh, you need to have, like, a beautiful woman that, like...
No, these first two movies... are going to be the most women we'll see in any. So, it's true. It's true. So
that's hilarious. Well, there's one killer, right?
The killer has Sally Ye in it as the singer.
Yeah,
that's kind of an homage to Les Amours, though. So.
Okay, yeah. Oh, damn! Anything.
It's a massive homage.
But he's like Scorsese, though, because I think someone asked Scorsese, like, why don't you have a lot of women? It's like, I want to film, like, stuff I kind of know, like, because they're both, well, especially John Woo, he's very, like, feelings-oriented.
Yeah.
So he's trying to, in some way, trying to speak to his own emotions. Well,
Like, I'd rather a director, like, not center around women than, like, try and portray one, like, incorrectly, and, like, not...
Even though directors can do it.
No, but I agree, but, like, if they can't, then it's, like, better than to not do it.
That's
at
fair,
all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but going to Dane's point, like, or and your point, like, the emotions that you feel between, like, Sing-Yi and this woman is different than the emotions you feel between him and San, at least in my opinion. I think their chemistry is better than the chemistry between him and the woman. But, okay. No, I just like that line. So.
That's why I'm like, you don't even need this stuff, like, really. Like, you could honestly, he could be having.
She's there. She's there to play the guitar during them for them to frolic in the flowers. That's the whole reason she's there.
I definitely think I do disagree with Danny with the point of, like, I do think it can be used correctly because, like, for example, in Rio Bravo, I really like the romance in that movie. and I think it you know, yes, you could see it as that, but, like, I think it can be done correctly if it's like.
It just feels so, like, this one, it just feels like a studio is like, yeah, we have to have this, you know, because a good movie has it.
Even then, sometimes, like, a director can, it can, like, I guess situationally it can, but it still works for me.
It's very rare, and I don't know if Rio Bravo is a good example.
Rio Bravo's a great example.
We'll keep going. No. I don't remember what I said on the episode, if I like that romance.
You hate it.
Oh, let's go!
I never.
It's hilarious.
Like, I love, like, Johnny Guitar, like, the way it does it better.
Nicholas Ray's, like, always, it's, like, the focus, really. Like,
it's either, focus, or it's, like, it's a loss, where it's, like, hint, it's always hinted at and stuff.
Yeah. It's always, like, doomed, you know?
Yeah, so.
Back to John Woo again. We're really floating through film, y'all.
Yeah, we are.
We always do. We didn't lie.
I mean, hey, this is gonna happen a lot for John Woo because he is influenced by so many people. Yeah. So. But yeah, it's back to the movie. San's mother dies. This is the scene where Sal's essentially trying to win him over to his side and try to get him to go and kill Pai or whatever the main villain's name is. Because during the scene, it's like intercut with Prey attacking his master's. House and severely injuring the master and killing everyone else in there. So
it's just so funny how, like, all that happens and they're just, like, walking and they stumble like right after.
It's so funny.
Like, we barely missed it. We gotta hear anything, but
hey, wait, they were mourning. They were in mourning, Danny. No, yeah.
They're like, yeah, we don't have enough money to film them there. So we just have to film them damaged and they have to walk on it.
I mean, he filmed the fight.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, he filmed the fight.
I just forgot about it.
He films the fight. It's a good fight, so.
Wait, do love this guy, though. Like, the main villain. He's huge. Like, he looks so much bigger than everyone else.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the main villain.
Oh, who destroys
the villain? So Prey is the one that destroys this.
The white blade?
Yeah, the white guy.
The white, okay.
Okay, so wait, is this the battle in the field we're talking about?
Not yet.
He's the one that destroys his homeland, or
Yeah, this is so. This is the guy that Sal was plotting with. Like, whenever we heard them, whenever we saw them talking, but we couldn't hear what they were saying, this is what he was telling him to do, was to go and kill his house.
I thought we do hear what they're saying.
I don't think so.
Because I had my notes, like, he offers him, like, $1,000 or whatever.
Oh, maybe we do hear the ending of it or something.
Yeah, because he offers him I forgot what...
Tails.
Tails, that currency.
Yeah.
To whatever, yeah, what basically what he's doing now.
Yeah. Yeah, because the whole thing... I forgot to mention that earlier, I guess, but their whole thing is Prey wants $10,000 to go kill the main villain, Pi, or whatever. And...
It feels so weird to do $10 for, like, ancient Chinese.
10,000 tails. 10,000 tails. It's like, but he only offers him, or Sal only offers him 1,000 because he says he's not worth 10,000 unless he kills Son, which is the Divine Blade, okay, which is why their whole duel happens later. But this is all just, it's all Sal masterminding everything to get what he wants to happen, because he wanted his master to basically be killed so he could get the sword. He wants Son to kill Prey and then eventually Pi, and so that's what this whole plotting thing is doing. Because right directly after this, Son draws a sword again because he's such good friends with Sal now that he feels like he has to protect him, essentially. Or at least do something he wants because he helped his mother.
Yeah.
So he does draw a sword again and goes out to fight Prey. And this is a big-time Kurosawa inspiration that I saw, at least.
On the field?
Yeah, okay. On the field.
I actually thought of Harakiri.
I still haven't seen
the fight in the...
Yeah, I still haven't seen Harakiri.
You know what I'm talking about? That scene? That scene when they fight in the field?
Which he does love. He does,
which
he does
love Harakiri. I thought it, okay, that probably is... That... It was like... I was like, damn, this is literally from Harakiri. But, it was. I thought it was hilarious how there's like all of a sudden just like in this like large ass field. It's like, what the fuck?
So good. Because like the thing with this movie is like you see those as, like David Shute said earlier, the poor wigs and like overlit studio exteriors.
Yeah.
But then he goes to this, like an actual like on set duel between these two men. And it's amazing. It lasts a while. You see, this is why I was talking about, like, you see the damage and you see them getting tired throughout the film.
Yes.
And you see the real pain on their faces as they get hit. And it's like a movie filled with no like killing shots, like they'll miss hits and everything, or just like barely graze someone. It's just, it's really good, and it's a really great fight, really great fight scene. But yeah, Son does end up killing Prey, and goes back and takes his sword to Sal. And what does Sal say whenever he comes back? He says his sentimentality could be his fatal weakness. basically talking about John Woo in general. No, I'm just kidding.
A lot of people say that though.
It can be a weakness.
But it can also be your greatest strength.
Yes.
So, but
I guess I watched a different like translation, because mine, I had the exact quote was, "To be so strongly governed by your emotions is a weakness.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, mine was the Criterion Blu-ray, and they translated it to his sentimentality could be his fatal weakness.
Okay, sentimentality.
But see,
I can agree with that. That doesn't make sentimentality bad, though.
No. No, because we do see at the very end that's what leads to Sing Yi's death, essentially, is his sentimentality. But the only reason...
It's basically why I don't like Spielberg in some ways, too.
I mean,
if you overuse it just to, like, create a good fit movie all of a sudden, you know?
I can agree with that.
But... You could, like, that's part of a studio thing, too. It's, like, cheap ways to kind of draw emotion.
Yeah.
Have a character fall in love with a woman, and everyone be like, oh, I remember, like, when I got married. No. It's not that. I don't know why. Like, there's something deep about us that people just want, like, a romance in a movie, I think.
Yeah.
Because you see it across cultures, like, it's just a long-ass thing. I don't know.
Romance is a central part of humans.
But just like even forcing stories that where it doesn't even need it. You know, it's like all of a sudden they have to go like talk to a wife or something, or there's like a girlfriend character.
Like husbands.
No, that's like literally called husband.
What?
The movie's about that.
No, they had that one scene where they went and talked to the wife.
Oh no, but that's part of the movie too.
I remember Dave saying that felt like it was in there just because they need that woman in there.
No, Cassavetti said that.
Yeah, he did say
that. Cassavetti said that.
Okay.
No, that's not what I said.
It's still worth it. It still works.
No, Cassavetti was like, I was worried about the audience.
Yeah,
I was
worried
about that. Oh, the producer's like, so let's get a wife seat in there.
That's so funny. But yeah, back to the movie. No, so this next scene is Xingyi and San fighting the con artists in the gambling den and figuring out that they work for Pai, the main villain. Once we figure that out, we get like this short scene of like, at least me being on a second watch, I know that this is like Sal being a fake ass, like committing suicide in air quotes. Like he hangs himself and gets saved just as San walks in, so that he like guilts him into going to kill Pai. But we see that Xingyi is watching Pai and everyone that's in the place that they're going to eventually go and raid, just to scout the location and see what they're going to go up against. So this is where we see a foreshadowing of the action to come, essentially, because we see three of the four groups of people they'll be fighting, like the ghosts. We see that guy with like the chain or whatever, the weapon on the chain, and then we see Pai, obviously, but we don't see the Sleeping Buddha, I don't think, in this scene. But he goes back and tells San what awaits them. But after he tells him, San's like, I've got to go anyway because I promised this to Sal. And so they do set out and go. And this is where one of the best jokes in the movie, at least in my opinion, comes in. Whenever they walk up and see their coffins, like they just see their coffins right in front of the building. And Xingyi says, "Damn, I was really hoping I could live to 60. Oh, I don't know. It's just a great joke to me. But this is where like the big fight happens. As they walk up to the house, people literally pop out of the coffins.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
the fighting starts.
So. I really like how this just turns into a heist movie for like all of a sudden too. Like, I kind of like that. I mean, obviously, I kind of wish it was like more like heist oriented, but like I get
more heist oriented.
It's just a bunch of action.
It is a bunch of action, but I mean, this isn't really a heist unless you're talking about.
Well, it's like the whole point. Like, oh, there's like at this point, there's gonna be the sleeping guy.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like kind of that part.
They're going through all the defensive, like the layers of defense that to get to this guy. But yeah, like, what is your guys' favorite? I mean, I feel like everyone's favorite is the sleeping Buddha. Oh.
Well, okay, the Buddha too, but like the cage, I really like the cage.
The cage.
I mean,
you kind
of skipped over my favorite part of the movie, the waterfalls.
Oh yes, no, I forgot about that. Yeah,
that's
like,
right before
they leave, they are frolicking through the flowers and the waterfalls together to the ladies' plant.
Someone, I forgot which one of them says, "Perhaps life and death aren't very important." That's kind of a John Woo theme too. Is like, life and death isn't necessarily the most important thing. Like if you have to go for your values, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then they're like, we have. Damn, I forgot what they say. Oh yeah, let's not dwell on today or tomorrow. We still have wine. And then they like start frolicking through the flowers as she like plays the music.
It's so good.
And that's like a John Woo like kind of montage scene too.
It is. No, I'm glad you brought that up because I did forget to put that in my notes. So.
I mean, and we're gonna use the picture
for the music for it.
For the YouTube video too.
Oh yeah, the picture. Scene, yeah. So. Oh no, yeah.
I had to bring that up. Yeah, but that's basically after then we get all these fight scenes. I like the go. I like that kind of ghost. Like you have to make them fight each other. Thing,
yeah, because that one definitely has a lot like the best choreography. Yeah. I think. I mean, the Sleeping Buddha. Like that one. Sleeping I mean, Buddha all of this has amazing choreography. Yeah. That's the thing.
I just like how the cage just came out of nowhere.
Yes,
like, I'll just throw.
I like the cage fight too.
It's just like let's just throw it in there. Like, just
make it interesting. The cage fight is insane. But yeah, I mean, the Sleeping Buddha is just...
Yeah, like, how did he, like,
that
do that?
Insane.
How did
I
he, like,
have no idea.
Like, cause, like, did he, like, because he, like, was, like, laying on the floor and he, like, stood up something.
That guy just has a super flexible body, too.
Or yeah, some you must say. It's absolutely
like, insane core, like, strength, probably.
Like you just have to watch it to believe it.
It looks too simple, and then when you think about your own body doing that...
Oh,
like,
no, I couldn't, no. Even
well, plus he has his eyes closed, like, a lot of it. Like, imagine how much practice this took. Oh, my God.
Yes. That's why, like, I need to watch some of the older, like, Chang Che, just, like, Shaw Brothers movies in general to, like, kind of compare. Because, like, I've seen John Woo's, obviously, later ones, which are, I haven't seen his martial arts movies, basically.
No, yeah. So. No, this one.
I don't have a very good reference point.
This one, I mean, the martial arts in this movie is really good. It is different because it is more like a dance than it is actual martial arts at some points. But
I've seen you guys compare King Koo like that too, exactly the same way.
Yeah,
King Koo I find more interesting than this because like, well, first of all, I feel like King Koo has like the magical aspect of Wuxia, Which this has the sword. It has the sword fighting, but like a lot of like King Hu is about like the spiritual side, and then like also the nature. Like the nature is like
this one's about the spiritual side of friendship.
It's you can just say the friendship.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but like. they're different.
The problem was like his first Wuxia director was King Hu, and it's like all downhill from there.
Oh, sure. No, it really is. It really is. Yeah. I mean, this isn't really like this has Wuxia elements, but it's more so just a straight martial arts kung fu movie. Yeah, they're different genres. So,
Wuxia usually has like magic. You
know? Wuxia's like the end of this movie where it's like his fuck around and his fuck around strat basically where he flies away. That's Wuxia. Yeah.
Where like Mortal Kombat comes from. I'm like, okay.
Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, all of a sudden where a character like will jump out of frame and like.
No, yeah.
But the way King Hu films it, it's like you can tell like, so oh, you just you need to watch it.
You believe it.
Oh my god.
This one's kind of unbelievable because like this Sao guy doesn't seem that powerful throughout the whole movie, and they just like once he gets the sword, he's like this most powerful like villain that they can fight. But yeah, no, this whole fighting is like is amazing. I really love the like I already said, the sleeping boot is my favorite part, but
I like this last when he's fighting the Jack guy too.
That one's I mean, that's like one of the best fights in the movie.
Yeah, I like the candle set.
The framing of
all the candles and like the way he has to use like the
just the
sulfur thing in his mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, just the opening frame of that fight is amazing. Like with all the candles still being lit.
Yes.
And then they just slowly go out as the fight goes on.
Kung Fu Panda reference.
Kung Fu Panda reference.
Do you remember all the candles they have? Anyway.
You mean Kung Fu Panda references?
I actually need to rewatch that before the new one comes out.
Yeah. We gotta do an episode.
We will.
Kung Fu Panda series.
1-4 will be our most popular one.
Let's do it. I'm down.
It probably would be.
We can't do everything. Nah, that's a lot of movies.
At least do the first one. We need to do the
it's
first
just
one.
Kung Fu Panda.
Okay.
Maybe we can just give our overall thoughts on each movie without like reviewing.
We need to go into Kung Fu Panda 1. It's like essential to me. It's just a part of who I am. You know.
I mean,
like,
I love the movie too.
It's incredible. Masterpiece.
Okay,
next job. No, one quote that sticks out, I'm sure, to most people that watch this scene that love John Woo is, we've seen throughout their fighting through this to get to this point, that especially in this scene where it's like you don't know if Xingyi is going to try to kill San, because that's eventually obviously what we're going to see is they're going to trick us into thinking he kills San. But as they've been going through here, they've been having these little like. He like kicks Son and then like stabs someone behind him and stuff like that. Like he's like playing or joking around at, like that he's gonna kill him essentially. And so at the very end, whenever they end up defeating Pai, he said Xingyi puts his sword right to San's throat and he says, "Cao Pong gave me 500 taels to bring back your head, and you are a friend when he needs you, but a piece of junk when he doesn't." And then San says, "So is this the final move?" Xingyi says, "I told you to be on guard." San says, "I'm never on guard with my friends." And then Xingyi said, "That's why we're both destined to fail." And then San says, "Will there be another move?" "Yes, there will be a third and fourth move. There are just too many moves when it comes to friendship. You just can't defend it against them all."
See, that's why I was like, I would have loved it if he actually did betray him. Because I was like, those lines would have hit so hard, honestly. Like, but, you know, obviously this movie like, can't allow for that. But...
John Woo never left for.
I feel like John Woo could do that. Let me Face Off kind of has like an evil character. Like he has evil characters. Like
I mean, he does kind of do that actually in Bullet in the Head.
Bullet in the Head, Face Off.
Because Jackie Chung, like the second half of that movie is real rough for him. So,
but you know, overall, you're basically right though. Like especially for this kind of character, where they
for the Chow Yun Fat character, essentially, this is not something he would go for, where he would actually just kill a friend. But, after that we get, like, them returning to the city, or at least Xingyi returning with San's body. And whenever they return, it's like, I think the prostitute's, like, talking to him, and he says, "I told you not to fall in love with the Drifter." Just more gunslinger shit. But, now we're back with Sao after all this, and this is whenever he kills his advisor. There's some really good lines in this because whenever he kills his master and then his advisor. Like, he kills his master with the sword after he finds it, after literally breaking the Buddha with all of his rage. Like, let's see, there's some spiritual stuff in this.
All right.
But, bro, yeah. Tried that. But, yeah, like, after he finds a sword and kills, like, his master, his advisor basically is telling him everything he's doing is wrong. But then Sal says, did you know that the making of a hero requires many people to die? And then his advisor says, I only knew during your father's time those promises and loyalty above all. So it's basically just, like, this new modernization, yeah. Killing the old ways.
Well, no, the line about the mythifying stuff is like a huge Western obsession. Like,
yes,
it's like John Ford's philosophy. Like,
I wonder if people have made the comparison between like the Wuxia or the martial arts genre and like Westerns in the West.
Oh, for sure. I'm sure. I mean, that's Wuxias are basically Chinese Westerns at the end of the day, for sure.
Yeah.
Because they're taking Chinese legends and making them, for the most part.
The past, like,
yeah.
They're Easterns.
The what?
They're Easterns.
They're Easterns.
Actually, it might work.
Plus, you already mentioned Kurosawa's influence, and Kurosawa is obviously influenced by the Westerns. So.
Oh, yeah.
And the Westerns are influenced by Kurosawa, too.
I mean,
they're feeding off
each
other.
Which one?
What do you mean? Which one?
Oh, the Sergio
Leone.
I haven't seen any of Sergio Leone.
Oh, I'm just talking about like Sam Peckinpah.
Sergio Leone's influenced by both.
Sergio Leone.
Like both Kurosawa and Old Westerns.
Oh, okay.
More Old Westerns, though, probably. But that's just my take.
Star Wars. The Space Westerns.
Yeah, Star Wars. Yeah.
Carrying on.
They are Space Western, though.
Especially Han Solo. I mean, Han Solo is obviously a Western character. Like,
I'm just so, like, not interested.
It just, it's a very bad time to talk about Star Wars.
I just, like, don't care. I just don't care.
You'll be back.
No, I've never been there.
Cut.
No, I'm
kidding.
No.
I don't want to be that guy.
No, I mean, we're wrapping up
we're wrapping up the movie.
Wait, what?
Nothing.
Did you say Star Wars was the greatest movie ever made?
No, I was mocking Danny. He's like, the prequels are the best thing ever made. Like,
I mean, they're getting re-released, I think, at theaters this year. The first one is.
Carry on.
The
first
one?
I'm sure the other one too will, too, at some point. But
The third one might be watching. The first one's the only prequel that doesn't deserve to be rewatched. It's a terrible movie.
First two suck.
The second one is bad. What's
the second one's
good.
It's good.
Okay, let's finish this one, though.
Let's finish this one. That's been... Yeah, I mean, we're literally at the end. Yeah, like,
the last fight.
Xing Yi comes to Sao to collect his payment for killing San, and he obviously gets betrayed. And I do like the quote that Xing Yi tells him. He's like, you probably don't know the rules. For a job, I kill with one stab. Those who don't keep their promises, I stab 1,000 times more. And then he responds, I have a rule to, if I want you to die, then you'll die.
Okay, that's
so stupid, but... No, but San does return in the course of this fight, and him and Xing Yi end up obviously defeating him. But I do love whenever he returns, like Xing Yi says, "True friends do exist in this world." And then this is where like his quote of "We're both destined to fail" earlier that I read whenever he fake killed him, because we do get flashbacks seeing like where the blood
came from, what actually happened.
Because
some reason the camera like got lost.
But the quote he says is, you've overlooked one thing, none of my deals ever come through. That's what he tells Sao whenever San returns, because Sao is completely shocked that San's still alive. He thought the singing actually did it, and he said, you've overlooked one thing, none of my deals ever came through. Essentially saying he's terrible at his job. But San says, that's why you'll always be unlucky, and he said, right, it's because I met you. It's just really sweet. But then, yeah, Sao reveals his, like, finishing move, if you may, where he flies around and fucks around, up, like, off-screen, comes at random times. But Xing Yi ultimately gets he saves the day. He saves Song, kicks him out of the way, and the guy gets, like, impaled as he comes down.
True friendship.
Xing Yi sacrifices himself for his friends.
I guess you can call it the last hurrah for Xing
Yi. It is.
Wow. Makes you think.
I love how it just ends here, though. Like, no, it does. Not like another scene where there's like a funeral and everyone's surprised and stuff. Like. Yeah.
No, because and like he freeze frames it.
Another John Woo movie has a similar ending like this. I feel like.
Where it just ends?
Yeah, with one of the leads dying.
Oh.
Is it The Killer?
I mean.
I don't remember.
Dark Tomorrow ends with one of Lee's dying. But
then, okay, but Better Tomorrow is a different ending at least.
Like the very end. Hard boiled, not really, but maybe kind of a little
bit. I haven't seen these movies, y'all.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't want to talk about too much.
Yeah, we don't talk about it anymore.
But yeah,
that's the last Rob Chivalry. I still love this movie. No, I still love it. I liked it more the first time. I didn't like it as much the second time because I have watched more other martial arts movies still. Like, I whenever I first watched this, I had watched, I think, like, 7 Shang-Chi. And a little bit of other kung fu movies. And up to this point now, I've seen a lot more since then.
It's interesting as an early film, I think.
No, it's a very interesting early film. I like the kernels of John Woo that will turn into, and what he'll turn into. Because this is, like I said last week, it's his trial run for A Better Tomorrow. Like, we see that Sing Yi is definitely, a Chow Yun-Fat Mark character in A Better Tomorrow. Yeah. It's a massive influence on that movie. But overall, I didn't enjoy it as much this time.
Damn. So,
not as much. I still love the themes and everything, but I still like it a lot. I still do.
It's
still
got some
like
high
it a lot,
for
so.
Sure, but...
It's definitely just... Yeah, it's a little long, too, so... just a little long. But, yeah, we can go ahead and take a break real quick before coming back with Plain Jane to the Rescue. Back from the break with Plain Jane to the Rescue, directed by John Woo, 1982. This isn't his last comedy, but I think it's his second to last comedy, actually. And up to this point, I've only seen this one and From Rags to Riches in terms of the comedies he's produced or he's made. I have a couple more of them downloaded, but I just haven't gotten around to them. I will say John Woo's comedy is not my favorite. Especially From Rags to Riches, or From Riches to Rags, I did not like that movie very much. This one I do actually like. We'll get into why a little bit later, but I am interested to hear your guys' opinions first. So,
you're not going first?
Should I go first? I like it. Damn, Danny, everything he's saying is like he's gonna.
No, the way you said that.
I like it. No, it's
the rating will be the true reveal.
It's very over the top comedy, which isn't particularly my type of comedy, but I do like respect it a lot. And there's a lot of really good gags because it is a gags movie.
Oh,
I feel like
it is.
I'm interested because I read your review and you compared it to Tati. I'm curious why you think that.
I meant more spiritually than actually.
Okay.
You can't just say something. He's like,
that's
what I'm
explaining.
He's like, no.
Elaborate on that, no.
Spiritual.
No, that's an interview with David Lynch. Yeah. Believe it or not, Eraserhead's my most spiritual movie. Elaborate on that, no.
No.
I like it, though. And it honestly surprised me. Like, it's like a really good looking movie.
Oh,
There's like no header on Letterbox, like the poster. It kind of undersells it.
No,
okay,
yeah.
But it looked good. All right, Danny, let's go.
No, I will explain. So the spiritual to Tati, I feel like she's a spiritual relative to Tati in terms of they literally can't hold a job because they can't fit in with society at all. And we'll get into this as the movie goes along, but Tati's really good at making himself not the centerpiece of the movie, and I think John Woo does a really good job with that, with her in this movie, too. I don't think she's the centerpiece. I think Hong Kong itself is the centerpiece of this movie, so...
Okay. There are certain scenes I would agree with that. Like, maybe the opening scene you could say that, where, like, these, like, shacks just get destroyed by the and stuff. But she is in other scenes, like... In certain ones, it reminds me of Chaplin. Too.
Oh, for sure. No, she's
more like
it's a lot.
She's like a tramp character.
There's a lot
like,
of tramp in this movie, for sure.
Yeah, less than Tati, but I could see some Tati there. But I like the movie.
Okay.
I didn't love it. Like,
I don't believe you.
I'm more curious what I'm going to think at the end of this as we go through. I didn't love it, though, I'll be honest. But I definitely like Last Rock Chivalry a lot more.
Okay.
I might like this one more than Last Rock.
Damn.
I like them about the same. So.
Okay. But what about you? Like, what made you pick this over...
Well, the only other one... I wanted to do one of his comedies because the comedy era for John Woo is a big portion of his career prior to A Better Tomorrow, so I felt like we needed to get one in there. And out of the two I had seen, this one was far superior, in my opinion. Although, John... I do need to watch From Riches to Rags again because John Woo, that's the one that he says... of his comedies and of a lot of his movies, that's his favorite because he had the most freedom for that movie, From Riches to Rags.
Oh, but that's the one you don't like, though.
Yeah, it's the one I don't like. I don't think it works very well, but it's not like a comedy. It's very it's very depressing. But I might need to I need to go in and watch it again with that in mind already because John Woo did not want to make comedies, and that's whenever he made From Riches to Rags. That's why it's a very like depressing, pessimistic type of comedy. But no, Plain Jane to the Rescue. I like a lot because it is just like incredibly crazy. It's just this incredibly crazy comedy that has this Chaplin, Tati, silent era like style to it that I really love. A lot of Hong Kong movies, especially in the early 80s, feel like this. Choi Hark's comedies actually feel a lot like this too, and I do like a lot of his comedies where they're focused more so on silent gags or like silent type gags, and like Michael Hui, who I've talked about a few times on this podcast, he's also more so focused on like gags and making, or at least he makes his like kind of like realistic characters and situations, but it's still gag based, and like a lot of them are silent era type gags, and I think that's why I like this one so much. But Josephine Tsao, who created this character of Jane. I don't remember what her actual name is. It's like Autumn, I think.
Oh, in the movie?
In the movie. I know
Denny
that's
Lam Ah-chun.
Lam Ah-chun. She has two other movies before this with this character, and this was a TV character apparently that she created. And I have not watched the other two, so I don't know how they are, but I have read a book on John Woo that's where the author had seen the previous two movies, and he does say that you can tell John Woo actually did make a lot of changes to at least this type of movie that she was doing before, apparently. Like, and it just looks a lot better, like Luke was saying. Like, it just looks like a real movie, kind of.
No, yeah, some of the sets were like, I mean...
It depends on the scene. Like some of the office stuff is really good.
Also, the when they're in the bar during like the filming, when they're filming the scene in the bar, like that was like bandwagon vibes, honestly.
Which scene in the bar?
The noir.
They're filming that movie.
When they're filming the movie.
Oh,
it gave
yes,
me a similar feeling
yes.
to like the bandwagon, the noir.
Like you said, the bar, and then for some reason my brain went to the birthday party when they brought out the giant ass cake. I'm sorry, but we'll get to that point. But no, that's one reason. I think that's the main reason why I like Plain Jane, though, is like it does feel like a silent era comedy homage film.
Yeah,
but yeah, we can go on ahead and kind of like get into it. We're not gonna like talk beat by beat. We're probably gonna tackle this a lot like we tackled the Tati ones. I feel like where it was just like talking about gags.
Yeah.
As it progresses in the story, but yeah, it starts off with like this great type of gag that honestly looks a lot like Modern Times to me, like the shack in Modern Times, like this rickety old house. But and Modern Times and Mon Uncle, I think, are the two movies that this reminds me the most of, at least thematically. This type of like modernization making us not individuals, or like taking away individuality. But this is the introduction to the Zeta Corporation, who is buying up everything in Hong Kong, and basically.
Honestly, some of my favorite stuff in the movie is the Zeta Corporation.
It's great. It's honestly a really good portrayal. Really good portrayal of capitalism in general. But yeah, we see that they've just bought this family's house, essentially, and told them to get out. And we'll see this throughout the entire movie, that they're kicking people out of their homes. More and more people are becoming homeless. I think Josephine Tsao herself says later in the movie, like, whenever she's talking to that lawyer, that 2 million people are about to be homeless in 2 days. Whenever this will passes over or something like that. But we are introduced to Tsao Fong, which is Josephine Tsao, and the credits fucking up at our job.
Oh, in the in the road.
Painting the lines.
I love
the road.
How like when she's painting it, like he like keeps freeze framing it. Yes. So like you like just like it's just like longer till you know like shit's about to go wrong. Yeah. It's just like he's delaying it and delaying it and delaying it, and then like.
And then it's a great little thing, like Dave said earlier, where the guy just drives into it, and right whenever he hits, it just says directed by John Woo.
Yeah, that's
great. It's a really funny way to portray that, but it's just a good way. It's a good opening for her character, because this is how we'll see her throughout the entire movie. Essentially, this, not like, I mean, she is a fuck up, but she's a fuck up that is more so a fuck up because she can't become part of the system. Yeah. She's too much of an individual. Honestly,
these opening scenes of her like going through all that job is probably my favorite moments in the film.
Yeah, no, I do like it a lot, because like we have the classical music something. I don't know why she's here.
Yeah.
But
there's like Americans all of a sudden like just like watching her.
Yeah. Like, we have no idea why these people are here, but
it's like a dream sequence.
the way the guy starts laughing during it is like,
it's so insane. I mean, so that happens.
That happens.
And then, like, the next one might be my favorite, where she's the stunt double for...
Yeah, this was one I was talking about.
Yeah, the one that you were talking about.
This one just takes forever, though.
It's good.
It does go.
The payoff's good.
I like it.
It's like the opening night thing where they're talking about being one.
Yeah, I really thought of that when I was watching it.
Over and over again.
But, like, also, do you see what I'm saying? Like, kind of like the vibe of the bar gives me.
No,
bandwagon vibe.
No, it definitely has that noir type vibe, too, for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, honestly, I thought it was funny.
No, I thought it was really funny, because like it keeps progressively getting more and more rough towards her, and she progressively gets more and more tired and can't crawl off the screen.
And then she just turns on them all of a sudden.
Oh, like, that's the best part.
It's like it's CTE, like, all of a sudden. It's like, yeah.
And then the cameraman says like there's not even a lens on the camera or something.
No, yeah, that was the best part. Like, because there was that one. I think it was like right at the very end where he hits her, and then she gets hit so hard that she's literally crawling off, and the guy's like, "Hit your mark, second team, hurry, film's running out." But then yeah, we find out the lens isn't even on the camera, so they have to do it again. But then we get introduced to Ricky Way, who you guys have also heard me talk about, because I love the Way Brothers. And I love Ricky Way. I love his face. He's just got this distinct face for the camera, this like goober ass look for me. I don't know. But he's
like love interest / friend.
He's the love interest / friend in this film.
Well, I think his name is
like, I don't know if is he a love interest?
Not really. Like he thinks he is.
Well, he's in love with her.
Yes, yeah, she's not. She's
and
not
she kind of because he's she's still going to visit the parents and stuff.
No, yeah, yeah. No, she definitely likes him. I mean, like as friends more so. I think.
Is it?
But
I don't know.
I think it's supposed to be like he's just in love with her and she's too aloof to realize.
Ignorant,
essentially.
Yeah.
I don't know. But his intro is hilarious. This might be my favorite joke in the movie, where the cop's just staring at the parking meter, and whenever the time runs out, his face is just like, ah. And then Ricky Way has to like take money from a beggar basically to fill the parking meter. I just love the cop's face in the scene. It's fucking hilarious. But we get more odd jobs that Jane's working after this moment, where she's like a janitor for Zeta, and this is where her and Ricky run into each other again. And I honestly love the scene where they run into each other, because it's got this like Walmart vibe to it, or just any type of corporation vibe, where it's like they stand up, like it has this like robot talking to them this entire time. It's like I don't remember exactly what it says, but it's like stand up, time to stretch, or time to do the stretch, and then they like do that chant. Oh, it's like
that seems like a mon uncle kind of thing. Okay.
For sure.
It's just like all like the corporate ass, like, yeah.
It is, because he's like Zeta. I have it written down because it makes me laugh every time. It's just like Zeta stocks up every day. Zeta's assets are unmatchable. Zeta's employees are the best. They put in 100%. Zeta has many benefits. Zeta offers flexibility, and then they just do that stretch at the end. That's just so stupid. Oh, it's so dumb.
Oh my god.
But yeah. This also does feel like modern times to me, but
yeah, okay, yeah, that too.
Just this type of feeling,
especially.
Well, because the second part of this joke is whenever they like go out, have their coffee or whatever, have their little coffee break, and then they come back, And then the robot is like, I still feel like you guys are feeling stressed. Why don't you take your bag out and yell all your complaints into it or whatever? Because they're all just like yelling all the things that are wrong with the company into the plastic bags, and they break it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just
I was confused what they were doing.
That's,
I was like, is are they like about to throw up?
They were just complaining. Like, no, they were just complaining into the bag, and then they pop it and then get back to work.
That's funny.
Less than Vince. But yeah, Ricky, after this, Ricky follows Jane. This is why I say it's not really a love interest, because it just feels like he's following her around like this love-struck dog, almost, and she's not really realizing him. But they go to the job agency, and this is where we see John Woo.
He's trying to get a job
because he's out of a job now. And she's like, what do you do? He's like, I'm a director. I'm a film director. And she says, oh, what does a director do? And then he says, he's God. He's a God. And then, like, it goes back.
There's, like, the smoke and, like, light behind
it. It makes him look like an angel. It's very funny. Because Ricky Huy, just after that, says, I've seen this man's films. They're terrible. But she's just impersonating the job person. She actually needs a job, so they have to go back down the line. But another scene, she ends up getting a job with the Zeta Corporation, actually, because
like the
son,
CEO.
The CEO wants her to train his father to have
Italian
good manners.
Fat, right? Italian fat?
No, he's not in this movie.
Oh, wait.
Who do you think it was?
Who's the guy with sunglasses?
No, that's not Chang Yifat. That is not him.
Who's that?
I wish it was. I have no idea who that is.
I think I would have been able to.
He reminds me of the president in the Legend of the Stardust Brothers.
That's like the obvious one.
Which you haven't seen yet. But no, he hires her to train his father to have good manners. And the scene that she arrives at the house reminds me a lot of Mon Uncle 2, honestly. Like, just arriving at this really modern-ass house.
Yeah.
But, she arrives there and...
Did they ever explain why this dad needs to be taught, like, manners and stuff? Like...
No.
This kind of came out
It's like another job she just found randomly.
Yeah, just another
Craigslist
random job. Show. I think, at the end of the day, I think it's just, like, the dad wanting... Or the son wanting the dad to sign over the will. And he thinks this will make it easier for him to... get him to do that if he like teaches him manners or something. I don't know, because that's his whole plot is to get his dad to sign over his will to him so he can control all of Hong Kong or some shit. Because we actually find out in one of these scenes, like in this moment, that like he owns 40% of Hong Kong's finance. We'll believe you.
And the ending of this movie is insane too. Like,
the ending of this movie is fucking just. The weirdest thing that you've ever seen.
And the most rushed thing I've ever seen.
It's so awesome. I love it.
I can't complain about the rushes because I love Popeye's ending.
I don't remember how Popeye's
when they ran out of fuels. They ran out of money, they had like kind of just like go to the ending really quickly.
But yeah, the intro of the father is just like, we see him playing, I think, like checkers in this park, and he sends these kids to attack her, basically. Or to like haze her. So they beat her up a little bit. She ends up getting the money, and this is like, you can say this is them like feeling like they are themselves connected, like same spiritual animal basically, because even the other guy that's with the father says like, oh, this one's different from the others or something like that. But now we just have a series of gags with her and the father, like her trying to teach the father manners.
I like the matches one.
The matches one is amazing. That's probably my favorite.
Well, mainly just when she walks into the pool.
Yes, that
she,
part's
like,
amazing.
Going.
That's a great shot.
It's a great gag.
With the music, too.
It's a great gag.
I was like,
that's probably my favorite gag, also.
I was like, I wonder if John Woo comes back to that at all. It's like a great... that's a John Woo type of shot right there.
The walking out of the water.
Yeah, which is like walking on the water. Like
it's just so fucking cool.
It's
very impressive. Some of the other ones, I mean, we have like the never shouting into the paper towel, which is kind of funny. I don't know. Table manner scene is also funny, but yeah, the incense one is definitely the highlight.
Funny, he's doing a lot of lifting, you know. No, I'm kidding.
Funny, he's doing a lot of lifting. Okay.
Some of them are funnier than
others. Some of them are funnier than others.
Damn. Okay, you don't love all these, dude.
I don't.
They're not all great, no. No, the next
one. I respect it.
If we didn't have the paper towel scene, would we have had the walking out of the water scene? You never know. No.
I mean, we still could have. I'm gonna just cut one out.
Next thing.
There's one where he's like, she's teaching him like a horse too.
An elephant?
Like food in front of him or something. I forgot.
That's teaching him to like walk straight or like how to walk properly.
Oh yeah, to walk properly. Yeah.
The walking properly and then the bowing both deal with the with that tail that she puts on him. But yeah, no, there are some funnier ones. But the incense was my favorite too. But the next thing that we actually see is Ricky and Jane out to dinner, where he's basically trying to like do the Lady and the Tramp gag with the spaghetti and the. I think this is going to be our header for the YouTube episode. Yeah. Actually, is with. Him trying to kiss her with spaghetti, basically. So, it almost works.
There's also the gag when he puts his arm around the wrong guy, like around the guy. When
it's a great gag. Also, this is why I like. I just love Ricky Hui. Like, he does this type of comedy well, in my opinion. But yeah, whenever he puts his arm around the guy, is also very funny. But then they walk to a car lot for lovers, and this also is just like, kind of just insanely awkward because it's like. He's obviously wanting something, and she doesn't understand. Because even whenever he's like trying to kiss her, she's trying to do kung fu with him. It's kind of funny. But then the Zeta Corporation comes in and ruins everything. Because they've bought up even more property. Kicks everyone out.
Is this where the gag where the guy's like trying to take down the poster, and the guys keep putting it
no,
up?
No, not yet. Not yet. Okay. That's coming up.
That might be my favorite gag movie.
That one is... I have that one specifically written down because I love it so much too. But, no, the actual next gag that happens is the parking gag meter returns. Because Ricky's is about to, he's trying to do the same thing where he doesn't get a parking ticket. Yeah. But then he sees he has, like, 10 or 20 on his windshield that have just been left there. And he takes him up to his boss, shoves him under the door, and the boss immediately comes out.
As the victim, as a victim of the University of Arkansas parking department, this one hits close to home.
Damn. Oh, no.
I've been there.
Fuck him.
They do get you.
They're terrible. They're awful.
They're fucking terrible. Fucking. It's like there's nowhere to park there, dude.
Exactly.
But yeah, the guy, the boss basically ends up. He just like dresses him down a little bit and gives him a decrease in salary. But he says, if every employee is like you, how can an organization function? But then yeah, Ricky and after this, Ricky. Basically goes to Jane and says, I need more confidence because I'm not confident enough.
Yeah.
And this is where she trains him to be as confident as an elephant. But
okay.
With some dumbass elephant. Yeah. Like,
that's why she's like teaching him how to roar and stuff.
Yes. Like... And the roaring is honestly funny. Like I think the roaring's funny. It's more like barking, but Danny hated it.
I don't hate it. Some of it is hard to get through, let's be honest. No.
You didn't like the scene whenever he went to confront his boss?
That one was funnier. Like, it's very hit or miss, this movie.
It is, because he barks. He barks in the Zeta sign every time he barks. It like goes out. I kind of like it. I don't know. I like it.
No, and that, it's actually maybe a little later. It has one of my favorite gags with the Zeta Corporation. It's a little later, though.
Okay. The conversation was with his wife, I thought, was funny because he's just like, I'll report your corruption. You're an industrial spy. He barks. I know who's the father of that woman's son. Barks. Your wife gives birth to a black baby. Barks. The boss says he'll give him a raise. I don't know. It's so stupid. But this next one is another one of my favorite gags where Jane and the father are at his birthday party. And they bring out this giant ass cake.
Okay, yeah, yes, that seems good.
That cake.
The first time
I
watched
this,
it's a good idea. How many people more use this? Like,
it was just hard.
Pretty hard to make, I guess.
Well, so I was actually thinking about this. You have to bake it in sections because there's no oven that's long enough.
Well, yeah, obviously.
You have to bake it in sections. Get a long and then, like, how do they keep it warm? Like, if you're doing like, you have to have at least like three ovens like that are wide,
or maybe escalator oven. You put it through an escalator, it, like, bakes slowly as it going down the
escalator. Like a Quiznos type oven?
I don't know what the Quiznos oven looks
like.
Like,
you haven't seen the Quiznos?
I don't think I've ever been to Quiznos.
Damn.
Is it good?
You know what I'm talking about, the Quiznos. Okay, but you know what I'm talking about, the sandwich thing.
No. I've been to Quiznos one time in my life.
Damn. Okay. So. But yeah, no, the cake is awesome.
Tastes cool.
The first time I watched this, I was like, when is the cake going to end? Like, it just gets absurd. It's just
absurdly long. And then it passes out, like, trying to blow
out. No, yeah, I mean, that's the whole plot of the... Yeah, that's the son's whole plot is to try to get his dad to
sign
the heart attack.
They trick him to sign the thing in the most, like, dumbest way possible. Like,
But yeah, even before that, even before the insane long cake, though, we do have the shot of like Ricky shooting her with a at her with an arrow whenever her and the father are dancing, and then it's like him transplanted into there. We get like a little dream sequence or like a daydream of him dancing with her, but the son ends up locking the father up in the Zeta Corporation like main building or like in the it's like a hospital or something. I don't know. He locks him up somewhere, but. Ricky ends up giving Jane his heart. This is the scene that you were talking about earlier where you loved, one of your favorite gags was. Because right after Ricky basically proposes marriage to Jane, the Zeta Corporation comes in, takes down her father's business.
Yeah, well, this is the gag where they're like, the guy's like trying to rip him off the butt. But then like, at a certain point, they start handing it to him to rip it.
It's so funny, dude. Because it's just like, it's a great, theatrical way of showing the corporation's power over the little guy. We can outlast you.
This also has one of my favorite, like, this is what I was talking about earlier, where, like, the execs are all just celebrating, like, we just had this win, and they're like, yay! Yes. Like, every time. It's, like, robotic.
Like,
yeah,
in, like, the, like, villain ass, like,
meeting
room, basically.
Yeah, we just, like, took this home, so they're all, like, just cheering.
Yeah, they're all cheering.
Yeah,
because I think that scene, the father comes in and, like, breaks everything up. Yeah. It's one of my favorite quotes, like, whenever he's, like, yelling at us, and he's like, I hate your glasses. All I see is my yelling face at it, of them. But... I can see why you thought he was Chow Yun-Fat, honestly. But
no, especially the way he shoots some of the scenes. With that's how he shoots.
Chow Yun-Fat would have been great in that role, for sure.
Yeah.
But...
Sunglasses.
This is where I actually had the quote that Jane said, like, 500,000 people are going to be homeless in two... half a million people will be homeless in 2 days. But we go to the hospital after this because he did end up locking his father up in the hospital. And this is another one of the great gags, I think, whenever they dress up as Santa. Her and the lawyer dress up as Santa, and they're trying to inject this bodyguard with this numbing agent or something, but it fails.
This is my movie. It's like one of those random cuts.
Yeah, I was like, where the fuck did this come from?
How'd they end up in a Santa costume?
I do love the Santa costumes, though, because even the guy goes like, why are there Santa costumes here? It's not in season. they're aware of it.
I mean,
it's like John Woo's aware of it.
Oh, good. It's like we're definitely missing the scene or something. Santa to keep an hour and a half, which I respect.
This did not need to be over an hour and a half.
No.
I love the ultimate end of this scene though, where never they get thrown out of the window. Like, just so stupid, so stupid and funny. But see, the entire end of this movie is just like is just Ricky and Jane trying to hatch plots to free the father from a situation. Because the next plot that's hatched is whenever they have like this fax machine basically that Ricky made that they're trying to send a will into the house or into the hospital. They do this by dressing up in red costumes and blinding a man with a red gun or something. I don't know. It's very stupid, but it's a cool contraption they have.
Yeah. Both these movies turn into a heist movie at some point, I guess.
Okay. A little bit. I mean, he does love heist. He does love Melville. So.
There's a good trade.
Does he have like a pure
heist car? It might be right after this with the car chase scene.
Is that like a pure heist?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I mean, check that out. Let me check that out.
Like, Once a Thief's a very good heist movie.
I like it. It's a good movie. It's
You're kind of shitting on before.
It's a solid movie. It's like a solid 3.5
hours. It's a great movie. You don't listen to Danny.
He hates it. He hates it.
Are we at the part with the car chase?
We're basically there, but before we do have that scene of the people like starting to protest because the Zeta Corporation is taking over everything, and this is where Ricky Huey uses his like newfound confidence to kind of stand up for everyone. But yeah, like after this is when the chase happens. Like we have the three Zeta Corporation cars. The green cars come. They cause a wreck in the tunnel. Traffic. And this is the one variety of traffic.
Yeah, honestly. This is really traffic.
Like, it definitely feels a lot like
traffic. I like
it goes so far as to show them all stretching and like nursing their wounds at the very end.
Well, I really like during the crash when just all of a sudden the car just jumps over.
Yes.
Like, I just love that decision.
It's so funny. No. And it's just really, it's done really well too. Like,
yeah,
the car stunts are really good.
Yes.
But this is like, this whole ending sequence, I think John Woo said it was him and Josephine Tsao's idea that they just had this ending sequence where it's basically just, he himself said this is what, or he said this is the first time that the British, or like that the British handoff of Hong Kong in 1997 was actually talked about in a Hong Kong movie, was in this movie. Like the
in what year?
Well, you know, like in 1997, China was supposed to
take
that.
Oh, they were
first
talking about it now.
Yeah, like this, John Woo at least says this was the first movie in Hong Kong to actually talk about that.
Hmm.
Because this entire last 15 minutes is just, it's like 15 minutes of people coming together for the better, or for like hope for the future almost of like Hong Kong in general. At least that's what it ends up being. Because it starts out as just a car wreck and then like this guy threatening to blow up the tunnel. But then it just turns into all the citizens like giving the government their demands.
I love that. Yeah.
It's so good. Like, it's just like,
it's like the only time they can get what they want is like during this hostage situation.
Yeah, where they all partake as end up partaking as like, we're not getting out of this tunnel essentially until we get what we want. Because I love it. Like, we have like the one guy that says, I hate the traffic in Hong Kong. Everyone, if you hate the traffic, honk with me.
Oh, yeah.
That just starts all the honking. It's so good. But Jane's request, obviously, to get the guy there. We have Roman Tam coming to sing for everyone in the tunnel for some reason.
That's definitely just like, we have to get some song in here.
Yes.
That's
definitely what it feels like.
Honestly, I kind of wish he just made this whole thing a musical.
Honestly,
I think it would have worked well.
I think it would have, too.
For me, at least.
They would have been like, I think it's a rare occurrence.
Well, for me, like, personally, like, I think a good way to make, like, this kind of over-the-top comedy work better for me personally is to compare it with a musical. Like, Legend of the Star Wars Brothers just does that really well, I think. There's other ones I'm thinking of that I can't. It just, I think it balance, it's a good way to like extend it.
No, it does. No, I mean, it definitely helps. It helps in explain the unrealistic situations that happen. That's
yeah,
for sure.
And just like yeah, and just the emotions too. They explain emotions.
No, yeah,
but yeah.
I do love them playing Mahjong also in here, but there's also delivery of a baby, you know, and the baby gets free passage through that tunnel for the rest of his life, and then we get a lot of pregnant women start lining up to give birth in the tunnel. But yeah, no, that's
the ending. No, there's like a really rush, like, the father escapes.
Yeah, the father, so yeah, he shows up. He shows up.
Father shows up at the last second to sign the will in time, like, everything's fine.
Exactly. Everything's fine. Everything's fine if you stick together.
The baby
together.
Thing is crazy, like, oh, his dad is, like, baby giving birth.
I love it. I kind of love it, too, because it's, like, Ricky... Or, like, we have that the dentist joke where the guy's like, I forgot something. And they're like, what'd you forget? He's like, I'm a dentist. And they're like, oh, get out of here. Like, you're not a real doctor. And then Ricky's like, oh, I'll deliver this baby. And then he pulls out a cat. Or, like,
oh,
a kid.
Yeah, he's at the wrong door.
Yeah, he's at the wrong door. Oh, no. It's a good show. It's good stuff. I like it.
No, I liked it. I liked it. It was...
No.
It's interesting thing. This was John Woo, like, who's going to change action cinema later on, you know?
Yes. No, his comedy era is I need to watch more because the two I've seen are at the very least interesting. Like, they really are. But especially knowing just like where he'd go from here, it's interesting seeing like where he started. But yeah, that is Plain Jane to the Rescue though. I like it.
I like it. Wait, why do you think that?
I like it too. I'm curious what Blake will give it, because you said you like this is about the same as last year.
No, yeah, I'm giving this one the same
kind of
as
I think. I just find this like more
No,
memorable.
You said you like this the same as Last Straw for Chivalry, too.
No, yeah.
That's crazy to me.
But... To me, this is like more memorable than Last Straw for Chivalry.
Just some of the fight scenes are great. Like,
oh, Last Straw for
those are harder to talk about. I feel like gags are a little easier to talk about than like,
no,
fight scenes in some ways, but...
Yeah. No, because like the thing with John Woo's fight scenes, and like we said earlier, is there, especially in the last Rough Trade, it's like dance, and if you pay attention to that, the action is amazing, especially. But yeah, what do you think, Luke? Did you think she was the centerpiece of the movie? I think especially towards the end, it goes further away from her being the centerpiece.
Sure, yeah. So,
first half,
it first half definitely is.
But I don't know if that's strength or just kind of like the movie loses its way, like it doesn't have a cohesiveness.
I think the second half stronger, honestly, in my opinion. But
yes, okay, I can see that.
But maybe if I knew who the character was before this, I would like the first half more, because this is the third movie apparently.
And apparently she's a TV character too. So
yeah. But yeah, that is the end of Plane Jane the Rescue. The end of this week, or the first week of John Woo. Next week, gonna be an absolute banger of an episode, honestly. Two of my favorite movies of all time, Better Tomorrow and The Killer. John Woo's real era starts. Like, we had to do this first. We had to do this first week because it is an important part of his career.
Yeah.
But the movies that I really love are coming up, and it starts next week. So until then, we hope to see you guys floating through the clouds.
为理想共你齐心找理想不为难寻求人生的意义受创伤被创伤遇到疑难仍旧想不怕困倦不怕旅途受挫折莫计奖莫计想预计成功可永享虽苦干 勤劳迟早得佳节，对信心，定要明了前路向，不分昼夜，不分雨晴随路障，悠悠长岁月，得失不必怨，际遇有万转千回，唯求能照耀。 为理想，共你齐心找理想，不畏难，寻求人生的意义。对信心，被信心，定要明了前路向，不分昼夜，不分雨晴随路障。